The Business on RTE Radio 1 with Friends First, the experts in protection and investment solutions.
Hello and welcome to The Business, coming to you from the city of San Francisco. Coming up, from the west coast of Ireland to the west coast of America, the Galway man with a vineyard in the valley, the young Irish who are plugged in and on the rise in the tech industry, and a rock star of venture capitalism on what Ireland needs to do to get moving. Well, I'm standing on the balcony of a beautiful house in the Haight District, right in the heart of San Francisco. Looking out, I can see some lovely hills stretching away from us, Golden Gate Park, and gorgeous little wooden houses lining the bumpy roads where we are. It's Sarah Flannery's house, and we'll have a chat with her in a moment. But first, it was down these very streets that Clareman Owen Canny took us on a bike ride yesterday.
San Francisco is famous for a number of things. Cable cars, Alcatraz, and something else that has me a bit worried, seeing as I'm just about to hop on a bike.
I've seen your bloody hills. You're not going up them on a bike.
That's actually one of the big selling points of the business, if we don't really go over downhills much.
Oh, great.
Yeah. Let's get the helmets on. All right, so Tim is going to kind of lead the way.
Yep.
And I'll take up the rear, and we'll just call out intersections and stuff.
This is Owen Canny, and he's in the business of showing people the bicycle-friendly side to this eclectic city.
There is a big cycling culture here. Indeed, mountain biking was invented pretty much in Marin County, which is across the Golden Gate Bridge. Lots of people rent bikes in San Francisco and ride across Golden Gate Bridge, and that's a marvellous thing to do. But there's also lots of neighbourhoods in San Francisco that are equally fascinating that people don't really get too much. And our niche was to guide people to these places and give them a very fun and informative experience about all these interesting places that you have in the city.
Owen is originally a software engineer. He came here in 1999 to work in that other iconic region.
Silicon Valley.
Yes.
And what was that like?
It was very interesting at the time because the dot-com boom was going on and there was a lot of money and ideas being thrown around and a lot of companies just coming from nowhere and becoming huge overnight, so a very exciting time.
So you've got nice eucalyptus trees, might even smell the eucalyptus as we go along.
Soon after he arrived, Owen fell in love with San Francisco's outdoor life.
Amazing national parks like Yosemite and Death Valley and Lake Tahoe close by, and you know, you could literally ski and surf the same day.
The great outdoors soon became more exciting than his indoor job.
So we're actually going to cross into this green area here and be on a bike path proper so the traffic will go away.
He resigned in 2006 to work as an international tour guide.
There's even a Golden Gate Park, a horseshoe court.
So he set up the bike tour company last August with two friends, Daniel and Tim.
And really our launch has been since the new year. We've had our website up, we've been, you know, fully functional in terms of having a fleet of bikes and a launch location that we're at here. And over the past few weeks, as the weather has been warming up and as more tourists are coming here, we've been experiencing a slow but steady increase in business. So things are going pretty well so far.
Was it anyway hassly setting up a business?
It's expensive to do business in California between, you know, registering a company, getting permits to from the police to do specific bike routes around the city.
Is the website really important?
It is for lots of reasons. Social networking has become a huge tool for spreading the word about businesses nowadays. Also, people use the web to research so much from abroad. So we've had business come in from places like Australia and really far away already. We go by Streets of San Francisco, or SOSF for short. And we hope that people finish our tours and say that was SOSF.
We're now at top speed, foot to the floor, pedal to the metal.
And are you enjoying life here?
Yeah, I mean, this is a fantastic city in lots of ways. My Irish friends in San Francisco and I like to call this place Tiernanog, because I really feel the same as when I was 25 here. I haven't really grown up a huge amount and there's no big rush yet.
The That was Owen Canny of the Streets of San Francisco Bike Tours, sosfbiketours.com, a really great way to see the city if you're ever in San Francisco. Well, Owen may have decided that the tech industry was not for him anymore, but I'm joined now by three bright sparks from Ireland who can't get enough of the fast-moving high-tech world of San Francisco. They are Fergus Hurley, Philip McNamara, and of course our host, Sarah Flannery. Sarah, I can remember some pictures of you, and many people might, in the papers years ago with the Young Scientist exhibition. What year was that when you won it?
1999.
And when did you come out to San Francisco?
I guess 3 years ago now. Oh, maybe four. Sorry. I've been in America for over 7.5 years. I came over here for my first job after college.
And what have you been doing?
I worked for Wolfram Research that makes Mathematica.
Mathematica, that sounds very...
leading technical computing software. I had that was my first job. Then I decided to get out of Illinois, where they're based, and come out to San Francisco. I had traveled around the country and really, really liked San Francisco. I came out here, learned to kite surf and stuff while taking my second job, which was at Electronic Arts, working in games. I worked for the worldwide chief technology officer there for a while, then moved on to a game team. And then 10 of us left. To make a long story short, we formed a startup making a virtual world game called Ternua, in fact. And then that very recently got acquired by another company. And I now work at that games company that acquired us. And they're called RockU.
That's a lot of movement in a short period of time.
About 2 years in each place, and a really great experience. I learned an awful lot, especially, I would say, at Electronic Arts, where there were some really senior software engineers that really influenced me a lot. And it was a great experience.
Are you writing mathematical codes and stuff like that all the time?
No, I work on games.
Playing?
Don't have too much time for that. In the past, you know, in a startup, you get the opportunity to work on every aspect of a game, almost literally. And now at RockU, I work on analytics or business intelligence for them. So analyzing how well ads are performing in terms of bringing users in, and I, you know, use Mathematica to help with that and things like that. So.
And it's going well. You like your life now in San Francisco?
I absolutely.
Are you here for the long haul?
Oh yeah, well I better be, or my fiancé might get upset. Yeah.
So your fiancé Luke, that is.
Exactly.
And you'll be getting married?
In Ireland, we'll take our business home to Killarney, yeah, where my mom's family is from, in September. Really looking forward to it.
Well, congratulations to you. Fergus Hurley, how long are you here in America?
I've been here for 4.5 years now. I came here first to go to MIT to do my master's in electrical engineering and computer science, and graduated my master's in 2008, so 2.5 years ago in June, and came out to Silicon Valley then to go to Stanford, where I was doing a program called Stanford Summer Institute for Entrepreneurship. It's a mini MBA for non-business graduate students that want to learn how to start and run companies. And through that program, I met a lot of great people and sort of got exposure to Silicon Valley that you need to sort of understand how it all works here. And from there, I got a team together, and we started a company that is focused now on the huge opportunity of, there's 4 billion phones out there pretty much nearly now, and they're all going to be replaced with smartphones over the next 2 years or so. And with that, people are replacing their point-and-shoot camera with their smartphone as their number one way to take photos. And so they're taking those photos, they're sharing those photos, they're adding effects to those photos, and they're consuming those photos on their phones. And we're trying to build killer applications for that space. And we've raised some seed funding from a top-tier venture capital firm down in Sandhill Road called Draperfish Jurvetson. And they're a multi-billion dollar investment firm behind a lot of very successful companies out here in the Valley and around the world.
Wow, well, it moves very fast from the sound of that. Philip McNamara, what about you? You're another Galway man. How come you're here in America?
Well, I came over here about 4 months ago. I was here about 10 years ago, and I spent about a year here working with some startups and some dot-coms. And then September 11th happened, and I moved back to Ireland and started a business there. I came back here because I started another business, and really focusing on, like Fergus, on mobile apps and retailing. And I just saw there's a huge opportunity here. The companies that we're dealing with are very open to working with us, and there's a huge scale over here.
So what is it that you're doing? What is the company that you've got now doing?
So it's called Tap Map. It's like, imagine you're tapping on a map with your finger. And if you imagine, if you're at home and you're looking in your cupboard for stuff that you buy normally, so you could be looking at a bottle of milk, or you could be searching for something in your cupboard that you want to buy. Every product has a barcode. And so you'll take out your smartphone. You can aim your smartphone at the barcode. And what that'll do is it'll look up local shops near you that have that in stock. And so it'll tell you straight away where you can buy that in a local store, you know, 3 or 4 miles from where you are right now, because the phone knows where you are in the location, and it'll point you in the right direction saying, okay, you can buy this product 3 or 4 miles from where you are. Here's the price. And it'll give you options to buy it online or buy it in a local shop.
And how is that business going? Are you at an advanced stage of it, or is it at a point where it's making money, or where are you at on it?
So we're fairly new. We're starting up. We're working with retailing groups over in Ireland, in the UK, and in the US. And the product is live. It's up and running for the last 6 months. We're not making any money yet. We're giving it away for free for the retailers, because we want to get as many retailers on board as possible. So we're lucky. We have some really good supporters back at home. Evergreen Health Food is our first investor and first company on board. They're a brilliant company in Galway, and they helped us along the whole way. But we're about 6 months from revenue.
6 months. So how are you living? If you've got no revenue and you're here for 4 months, and
it's been interesting, because we haven't raised any money yet. We've got a little bit of angel funding from investors in Galway. So I'm staying with the family in Berkeley, living on their couch, and I've got a friend's car that I can use. So it's been a great experience though, because you're kind of living on the edge, really.
Sarah, I presume being here, you might have come across stories like Philip's before, or have you, in terms of people looking to come to San Francisco to make it, come to Silicon Valley to try and get investors, and working really hard to try and open doors?
Absolutely. I mean, you see a lot of it. Like, you know, when we ourselves went through that whole process he was just describing with Ternua, 10 of us left. We took, left EA, sorry, and we had reduced salaries and all sorts. And when you're working for yourselves, you just work ridiculous hours and you're really trying to build something. And when we tried to build our thing in front of the community, and we did the same as you. We tried to build something and then sell it. I think the lesson there might be to get the money next time first. But we did sell it in the end, and it was a fantastic experience to go through that whole thing. But it was a very difficult experience at the same time. But I mean, working with a small team of people like that and being able to move fast, and it was a fantastic experience. It's exactly why you would want to be out here. And yeah, we did talk to plenty of VCs and things. But
and did you make a lot of money out of your company?
Such an Irish question, isn't it? I owned 4% of the company, and so I made a bit, but it was a small company, and
What about you, Fergus? Is the story now that Philip was telling, sleeping on couches and so on, your life hasn't been like that, or has it?
It has, actually. So when I came out here first, when I finished the Stanford program, we were, they call it bootstrapping, when you're without funding for the first few months and you're trying to just like get the product together, meet the investors, get user feedback and all that sort of stuff. And so we'd been out here for about 6 months without any funding. And we actually came, it was the time of the crash in the economy. So like late 2008, early 2009. And we were the only company. So my company is called Clickster. And for the quarter of Q1 2009, we were the only company to raise seed funding, pretty much. And it was like a really hard time to raise funding. But you just got to believe in it and make it happen, really.
Philip, did I hear somewhere that you're involved in kitesurfing?
I'm the president of the Irish Kitesurfing Association. But Sarah here is a kite surfer, and I just found that out. And San Francisco is a fantastic spot for kite surfing. You're surrounded by water.
What is it about kite surfing, Sarah?
Oh, it is just a fantastic sport. Now, some of the places out here are a little bit cold, like back home. But there's also the bay, which is kind of warmer, surprisingly. It's just this fantastic feeling of freedom. You just set up your gear, and you just, the minute you hit the water, you can go out and you can hear those fantastic waves to play in. It's like an amusement park for as long as you can have the good wind to be out there, and hopefully you'll get to stay and get some good wind before you go home.
I think there's a real correlation between risk takers and kitesurfing. So kitesurfing is a really dangerous sport to do. It's quite dangerous, and people get hurt quite a lot, and people give up quite easily because they get thrashed to the waves and they get dragged over the sand. So you have to really keep at it. And there's a kind of a group of core kitesurfers here in San Francisco, and they're all entrepreneurs, and they meet together and they talk and they network together. And it's a really good group to be in. I think there's a, it is quite a hard sport, and you have to be able to keep at it and keep going. But this is a great city for it.
Fergus, in terms of the mentality out here, it seems like there's a very positive mentality.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that when a couple of years, like even 2 years ago, the mentality here was like people were all talking about the recession. But now there's very little talk about the recession.
And people have moved on very quickly.
Yeah, people move on really quickly here. And it's, you know, 2 years ago in Ireland, people weren't talking about the recession that much compared to even here. But now people are talking about it a lot, of course, in Ireland. But here, people don't even mention it hardly at all.
Well, now, on that positive point about American positive mental attitude, one man who does know an awful lot about it is Craig Harrison from Expressions of Excellence, and he is also a leading Toastmaster. Craig, this American positive attitude, what's the key to it?
Well, it's what fuels success, George. If you think about it, this country really was founded on this entrepreneurial spirit, this pioneering spirit, and a spirit that I'm happy to say is alive and well in our three guests today, who, like many other people, came to this country for opportunity and came to this country to maximize their opportunities and to apply their skills and develop their skills and to chart new territory.
The funny thing is, though, I know a lot of people who are quite positive in their outlook, but they tend to be afraid to take risks because, you know, they could fail and so on. That doesn't seem to be the situation here.
Well, Silicon Valley is full of failures who have failed forward. They have failed and failed and failed until they succeeded. And I think it was Thomas Edison who said, I have not failed. I have found 10,000 ways that don't work yet. But if you persevere, if you have a dream, if you have a vision, if you stick with it and support each other, all great things are possible. And one of the greatest things that ever happened to me was a software company that blew up figuratively. And at first, I wallowed in the misery with others. And then I realized I now have contacts throughout Silicon Valley. And we've all since gone on and done other more successful things. And I think that a little bit of failure, if you use it as fertilizer, can be very positive. Ultimately, people can either dwell on the problem or the prize. And I really believe that the sooner we start to fail forward and look at new opportunities and what we can learn from the past, the quicker that we will strike the vein of success.
Well, I'm wondering, do you think Irish people could do with being a little bit more Americanized? Would it help?
Well, I think that all cultures can benefit from looking at the glass as half full rather than half empty. I believe that all of us can benefit from this notion that whether we think we can or we think we can't, we're right. Why not think that we can? The little train that could, he thought he could, he thought he could, he thought he could get up the hill. He knew he could. He did it. And I definitely subscribe to that. I believe it is transferable. I can't think of anything as unbeatable as the luck of the Irish with a positive attitude. That's more than I can bring to the table. So I think we can partner together. Absolutely.
So, Craig, would you have any advice for the three guests we have sitting around the table here, young people, young entrepreneurs with great ideas and great ambitions?
Absolutely. They've got to believe in themselves, they've got to believe in each other, and they've got to believe in their team. And with that, they will succeed.
Tommy Tiernan actually gets this on the head. You know, he says about American people, they say, have a nice day, you know, have a nice day. Tommy says, I love any sort of day I want to have. You know, Irish people are much more realistic about all this. We say, good luck now.
Yeah. And, you know, I used to do a lot of mountain bike racing when I was younger, when I was fit. And I raced all over the world. And in Ireland, you'd be on a trail, you know, trying to overtake someone in Ireland. And, you know, it almost get violent. You kind of have to shout and say, get out of my way, I'm coming through, you know. And the Irish guy would, you know, he'd give you a hard time as you passed him, you know. And then I started racing in America, and you come up behind someone, you'd say, let me through. And he'd pull over and say, go on, buddy, keep going, keep going, keep going.
Continuing in that competitive vein, I'd like to ask our three guests to participate in a quiz to find out just how American you are now. Are you game?
Yeah, woo! Yeah, we'll go for it, yeah.
I hope I don't fail. My brothers will kill me.
Well, ladies first. Sarah, we would like you to either recite or sing the first verse of the national anthem. How far can you go?
Aron Naveen. I don't think he means that one now. I think it's the American anthem he means, Sarah.
I fail.
I can't.
I fail, I'm sorry.
Okay, gone.
All right. Next question. Fergus.
I hope I don't pass now, otherwise my family will disown me here.
It's like, tell him nothing. It's the tell him nothing mastermind thing.
Yeah, I sense trepidation. They're not sure if they want to win or lose. They can win on one continent and lose on the aisle. Well, can you name either five of the founding fathers of this nation, or five characters from The Simpsons TV show?
I'll take The Simpsons one. Marge, Homer, Bart, Lisa, and Maggie.
Wow.
Very good.
We have a match.
I'd have got that.
Very good.
You won't get into trouble in Ireland for
that. That's more popular in Ireland than this year, I'd say.
Clearly more popular than the Founding Fathers. All right.
Third question.
Now, Philip, your mission, if you choose to accept it, is to make a basket. I hereby hand you this ball. It is a basketball. And I ask you, can you make a basket over there?
Without smashing the house.
Absolutely. He's
okay,
taking the ball. He's
here
aiming it. He's lining it up. He shoots.
And
oh,
he
and
misses.
It just misses. And he misses.
Is that a good or a bad thing?
It was a great effort by all three contestants. Would you not agree, George?
Oh, it was indeed. And on the basis of your test there, it's 1-0-0. And Fergus, it seems that you're the winner.
Well.
The most Americanized of the three guns in the high-tech Silicon Valley area.
Damn.
Well, I wish you all the very, very best of luck in America, and with all of your hopes and all of your ambitions, and I think that you're an inspiration to so many people.
Thanks,
back
much.
Home. Well, as we discussed there, there does seem to be plenty of opportunities for businesses here and lots of ways for people to get money for investment. Of course, the lifeblood of Silicon Valley is provided by private investors, or venture capitalists as they're known here. And earlier we met up with one of the biggest names in the industry, Jeff Clavier, down by Pier 3. Jeff Clavier, they say you're the rock star, or a rock star, of venture capitalism.
I actually don't really like the concept of being treated as a celebrity, and that's something which has been happening for the past year or 18 months, where suddenly it's become cool to be an angel investor, because for me, the rock stars are the entrepreneurs who we back. But, you know, it's kind of useful to be known, so, okay, you know, we'll deal with this.
Have you ever been approached by Irish product makers or Irish people who are looking for an investment, looking for an investor?
I've met a few Irishmen who are doing companies in the US. And, you know, you have to realize that when you go around the valley, most of the people are not American anyway, right? They all have, you know, funny accents like mine. And so provided that you do a company locally, it doesn't actually matter where you're from and, you know, whether you're Irish, French, Italian, Indian or whatever. I've also met a few guys who were trying to raise money in the US with Irish companies. And those are typically much more tricky because, you know, we have so many opportunities locally that whatever comes from Europe has to be like an exceptional opportunity, you know, a Skype of sorts, where people look at this and go, this could just revolutionize or disrupt the market. And the fact that they're from, you know, Ireland or Sweden or, you know, Estonia, we'll sort of deal with. Because to us, having a company which is 8, 9, 10 hours away from a time zone perspective, that is in a different sort of legal, you know, setup, that's going to be a pain in the neck to deal with every year when we deal with the audit, when, you know, the auditors go through 80 or 90, you know, US companies, and then suddenly they look at something and they go, company incorporated in Estonia. What the hell is that? And you spend 5, 10 times more, you know, cycles on that company than any other. But in a global market, you have to make, you know, those decisions. And so, you know, the issue I've seen with European companies way too many times is they will look at building a footprint in their local market, which is typically too small, right? Except maybe Germany, which is sort of a big country. And then they will, you know, go for the language transition. So they will say, okay, well, if I'm German, I'm going to go to Switzerland and Austria. And if I'm French, I'm going to go to, you know, Belgium and Luxembourg, like Luxembourg was a market. At least, you know, the Irish companies speak English, and so they can go global more easily. But the way they sort of market, the way they think, is often sort of boxed and not broad enough. And
how
what
do
I,
you mean, boxed and not broad enough?
Boxed meaning, you know, my marketing, my product will cater to my local market. I will sort of market it in Ireland. I will market it in the UK, you know, in Great Britain. And then maybe I will sort of think about sending a guy, you know, as a scout in the US, but that won't go sort of seriously about that market. And, you know, the US market is not something that you just dabble into. You just go. And so when you see that ambition then you actually, you know, consider it.
So do you think Irish companies then, on that reflection, are not ambitious enough?
I don't want to make any categorization because I haven't spent enough time looking at those opportunities. I was lucky enough to be invited by Paddy Cosgrave to participate to the Founders Conference last year, and I really enjoyed my time in Dublin. You guys know how to host conferences, I can tell you. And so I interacted with a bunch of entrepreneurs, and it was more, you know, the what they asked us to do is more to explain to them how we deal with things in the valley. So unfortunately, I didn't have a real chance to interact on a one-to-one basis. I just spoke to a bunch of people. I met a bunch of angels, and I said, you know, this is how we think about, you know, the opportunity. And clearly, you know, we are from another planet from their standpoint. But hopefully, the fact that we told them that it's just a matter of ambition and sort of going for it, you know, we'll eventually unlock things and we'll get maybe one or two entrepreneurs to think different or sort of bigger. Clearly, there is a lot of interesting companies having their European headquarters in Dublin or in Ireland, right? I heard LinkedIn was there, Google is there, Facebook is there, which means that those are people who are trained to the techniques of building and supporting those kinds of internet products, right? And that is a very, very valuable sort of training that they can then take and build their own companies with, you know, in 2, 3, 4 years. The thing is, they have to basically be willing to throw that job out, take the risk, and go, you know, without a salary for 6 months, a year, whatever, because often that's sort of the commitment that entrepreneurs make here. And the one thing which was sort of fascinating to me as well is, you know, we're pretty public about the fact that we're angel investors. The reason why we get 10, 20, 30 opportunities sent to us a day is because people see us, you know, on Twitter, in the blogs, in the news, you know. And therefore, we use that publicity of sorts to just get more deal flow. And what I understood from Irish angels is that they were actually trying to hide the fact that they were investing in companies and they had been successful, and they said, well, we don't want anyone to know that we've made money. And the problem is that it's difficult for entrepreneurs to figure out who's actually a potential angel, like a potential suspect for them, for their financing. So if your guys hide and don't want to be public about the fact that they're here to support entrepreneurship, it's impossible for those guys, right? If people really want to leverage the startup world as one of a few that can actually create jobs, and my understanding is that in Ireland, you know, this is something that is barely needed, you just have to just turn the system on its head and make sure that the people are ready to take the risk, who are willing to put their time and their money into startups that get off the ground and that create jobs and create this sort of initial lift in entrepreneurship. It has to sort of come from the top and just say, look, this whole sort of BS about hiding money and, you know, all the good or bad reasons for it have to go away. And there can't be any sort of, you know, you being mad at me because I made some money, because at the end of the day, that will be good for everyone if we contribute back and give back to the community.
Clavier, thanks very much.
My pleasure.
That was venture capitalist Jeff Clavier. Sarah, you've been a great host and a most generous host this morning, and thank you very much. Many thanks for your hospitality and all the tea. And we'll be back with you from a pub with a difference right after these.
The Business. The Business.
On RTE Radio 1.
Hello again, you're listening to The Business, coming to you from the City by the Bay, home of the 49ers, the Summer of Love and Silicon Valley. It's San Francisco, and I've just arrived outside a very mysterious door here in the Tenderloin district of the city. And I'm told that...
Password, please.
If I say this word, Sam.
Oh my God, the door opens.
Well, it is a mysterious speakeasy type of a place. I think lots of candles... Very old brick wall, long, very old bar, steps, a very mysterious place to this, an old record player in the corner, and I think I'm coming to a dead end here with nothing but bookshelves on it. Oh. Oh, Hogwarts, eat your heart out. It's a secret door. Oh, my God, into a big, huge bar. Brian Sheehy, you're the owner of this bar. Why all the mystique and the passwords?
Well, we really don't want too many people knowing about this bar because it is a 1920s speakeasy. And if the word gets out too much, we might be overrun with too many people here. And the word might get out that it's a phenomenal cocktail bar here in San Francisco. So we have to put a few obstacles in front of people to make sure that the people who actually make it past our doorstep are the people that are really interested in great cocktails and great spirits from around the world.
So it's about exclusivity, really?
It has nothing to do with exclusivity. It's all about elusivity. There's a different password every day, and you will get the different password every day.
And today's one, Sam. Why Sam?
Well, today is we're opening up a little early for our Irish crew today, so we had to come up with a last-minute password, and it's the password that we use for all Kerry people when they come to visit us, and that password is Sam. So if anybody comes here and uses that password, it will be guaranteed that the door will be open for them.
By a Kerry man?
Maybe not by a Kerry man, but people that will respect the people from Kerry.
And in terms... Everybody respects people from Kerry, by the way, Brian, particularly in GAA and so on. In terms of when a person gets in, are they in for the night?
They're not in for the night. When you make your reservation, you have to decide in advance how long you'd like to stay. So you get an option of staying for 1 hour, 1.5 hours, or 2 hours. So when your 2 hours are up, we'll kindly present you with the tab, and you'll pay your check. And it's time to vacate your table because we have the next group waiting at the door to come in to take that particular table. But we don't kick you out on the street. We have three other bars within Bourbon & Branch that we'll escort you to.
I'm not surprised the amount of secret doors you have around the place. Well, they have to go through some other bookcase and then they're safe again. Is that it?
Absolutely. Well, in the main bar, they get phenomenal levels of service. It's seating only. It's all tableside service, and they get to select from over 40 different cocktails from the menu.
Would this work in Ireland, do you think?
Maybe not as a 1920s-style bar, because you have to maintain a level of authenticity about the business.
What about the concept of somebody coming in and you're in for 2 hours or 1 hour? You said that's all you're coming in for, you got to go now, that kind of thing.
If a great bar existed and you had the demand out there, definitely there should be a reservation system in place, and that reservation system should have a check-in time, a length of stay, and a check-out time.
So it's like a hotel.
Just like a hotel.
Like a hotel room as such.
Absolutely. In the hotel management, we would call it yield management.
And what about the whole technology side of it? How important is that to the operation of your bars? Because you have more than one bar, haven't you?
Yeah, we have 4 bars here in San Francisco, and technology is critical to the success of the business. My partner in the business here, Doug Dalton, he has a tech background. He was one of the founding programmers at Netscape many years ago. And it's been a great partnership because we're able to take a technological approach to a business that's been around for hundreds and hundreds of years. For an example, we've come up with a stock control system for a bar environment that we call Bartelligence. Today, every bar and restaurant in the world practically has a point-of-sale system that those bar operators depend on to control the stock. At the end of each month, they want to know how much was spent on the stock. Now, there's a huge problem with that. You can never tell for sure what was actually consumed because of the amount of drinks that are given away by bar staff to their friends or family, spillage, theft. But we've come up with a foolproof system that employs modern technology to track all of your stock.
Foolproof? How?
It's foolproof because every bar operator in the world places an order with their sales rep, let's say for 20 bottles. Those 20 bottles will be delivered to you on the first of the month. Through the course of the month, you'll order a few more bottles. At the end of the month, you'll have to take your stock. And what happens is bar operators all over the world, they depend on the point-of-sale system to track what was actually sold rather than what was actually consumed. And that's where the foolproof part of our program comes in. It's an online system, and it can work anywhere in the world. What we do is we determine what the opening stock of the bar was, what was consumed in the month, and what we were left with at the end of the month. So it's opening stock plus purchases minus closing stock, and that absolutely tells us what the consumption was. As a bar operator, I don't mind if our staff are giving away complimentary drinks. There is going to be theft in the business, but I really and truly need to know at the end of my month what was the actual consumption, and this is the foolproof way to do it.
Well, that sounds like something that you could sell anywhere, and I'm sure if you can bring it back to Ireland, there'll be an awful lot of bar owners who'll be pretty happy with a gig like that. Bartelligence is called, so we'll watch out for that. We've been joined by a few other Irish immigrants who've pulled up chairs beside us here. Caroline McGrann, let me start with you first. You came here quite a long time ago, didn't you?
Yeah, the first time I came to the States was, 85.
And what did you come to do?
We left Ireland in the mid-80s because there wasn't really a whole lot there, and I first went to London and spent 8 months there and then came to the States. I had an uncle in Ohio, And then I went on to Chicago, worked in Chicago for a couple of months.
At what?
Waitressing and bartending.
And now what?
Now I own a resort in Yosemite.
You own a resort in Yosemite?
Yeah. It's a rustic mountain resort. It's a business I started 14 years ago.
And how did you get into that?
Well, I travelled around the world and I backpacked and I love the concept of hostels. I come from a family of 14 kids. So
in Waterford, is it?
Yeah. And so I just grew up with a lot of people around me always. And
you missed them?
Yeah, I always wanted to open up a hostel.
And so how did you come from waitressing to that? Was there, I mean, in terms of finding the opportunity or getting the money, is it easy in America to do that?
Well, I worked for 7 years, two jobs, and saved my money. And I saved $100,000. I borrowed $100,000 from friends. And I borrowed $200,000 from a bank. And I bought this property outside Yosemite.
Is it a hostel still?
It's still a hostel.
How many can you accommodate there?
200 right now.
And what's it called?
It's called the Yosemite Bug Rustic Mountain Resort.
Bug. Is there bugs? Are there bugs?
The bugs are outside.
Yeah, make sure you keep them out. Colin Marine, you've been in America too for quite a while. How did you come here?
I came here in the early 90s to study graduate school here. My background was in artificial intelligence.
Artificial. But you're also a musician.
I am.
From artificial intelligence and musician. Go on. So you came here to do what?
Robotics.
Sounds very complicated.
Came to do a PhD in upstate New York, not in San Francisco originally, a place called Rochester, New York. And I did a master's there, and then after a while I realized that all the funding was coming from the military and decided that wasn't for me. I didn't want to write grants to U.S. Navy and the Air Force for the rest of my life.
Conscientious objector. And then, how did you move out to San Francisco?
Well, I had a website that had become quite famous devoted to European soccer. And it was up in 31 different languages while I was at graduate school. And there was a game company over here that were making a game called Three Lions for the English market and the European market in general in 97. And they needed somebody who knew about the European soccer. So they brought me over here. And then they found out I was doing artificial intelligence and they asked me to make the game as well.
Oh, that sounds good. So you fell on your feet.
Yeah.
And what about your games, when one thinks of it, they're kind of violent.
I haven't made any violent games intentionally. So, I suppose Tiger Woods. I've made Tiger Woods a few times. That golf game.
Depends.
People can go a bit mad in that game. It's usually not particularly physical. It's usually mental.
So Tiger Woods. Who else have you made as a game?
We've made The Godfather, which was the game that surrounding the film. We had all the old actors come in and do voiceovers for that, like James Caan and people like that. John Madden. The football game, NFL football game.
Wow, what a life. I mean, between from artificial intelligence to music and playing games, I mean, you really made it in America. Mm-hmm. Oh, Barry Cassidy, what about you? You're here also quite a while in America, is that right?
Yeah, I actually came here around the same time as Colm. We've been actually friends for, you know, since the early 90s.
And you're from Cork originally, is
yeah,
that
I'm
right?
Yeah, from Cork originally, but I grew up in Limerick and Waterford.
And how did you get to San Francisco? Did you come straight?
No, I actually lived in Chicago for a year and lived in Texas for a year. And I didn't really think there were the types of places that I wanted to live in full time, you know. So I visited San Francisco and, you know, kind of fell in love with the city, you know, my first time here.
Now, you're setting up a new business. What is it?
It's an online dating website called SwoonXO.
SwoonXO. And what's going to mark you out with SwoonXO? Because there's a lot of online dating sites. And I'm sure in America there's even more.
Yeah, well, I had worked, you know, up until about a year and a half ago, I worked for Adobe Systems here in San Francisco. And I had worked on a web conferencing product for them, which was, you know, which is a product that creates a virtual corporate meeting environment for people in remote locations. So I was, you know, spent quite a bit of time thinking about how I could use this technology in other applications, and I you know, felt that online dating was something that was pretty poorly served. It's not, you know, they don't use a lot of new Web 2.0 technologies. So originally I set out to create an environment, a social environment online, using the same type of technologies that are used in web conferencing. And you know, I felt that this type of environment where people can meet in real time would be more likely to facilitate real attraction and chemistry. Oh,
so you can get an idea of the person on screen before you ever go and meet them, so you don't have the same sense of disappointment if they don't turn out to be what
exactly,
they look like
yeah,
on an email.
You can see them. I mean, you meet them in a type of party environment and you can see them, you know, live on webcam and speak to them. So the sort of things that you don't get on other dating websites, like, you know, seeing the person's hand gestures or their voice, you know, things that might attract you to a person, we're focused more on that.
So SwoonXO, have you used it yourself now?
Well, it's not live yet, and I don't think I will use it when it comes out because I'd probably be at an unfair advantage.
What about the website? The idea of dating websites, is that something that you've done?
No, I've never done anything related to internet dating before, but, you know, I felt it was an industry that's worked with the same model for about 12 years, and it's overdue for an overhaul.
Right, go to the grasp the future and make the future such. Yeah,
yeah, hopefully.
Owen Reynolds, you're not here that long in San Francisco. You're only how long here?
I came here last summer, I think last June.
And why did you come?
Well, I have been working in Ireland as a journalist for about 8 years. My last job was with the Irish Daily Mirror. I was working as a crime reporter there. And I just felt I really wanted a change. I had the opportunity, came up to get the visa to come over to America. And it's quite a good visa. It lasts for 5 years. And I wanted a new challenge, and I've always felt that I wanted to work as a freelance. And the idea of working as a freelance in San Francisco, which is a city that I knew I liked anyway, I had visited it previously, and I have family here. So the idea of working as freelance in San Francisco really appealed, so I just decided to go for it. And so I've been here since then, and things are going pretty well so far.
And what are the big stories here at the moment? Because obviously you're feeding them back into Irish newspapers as much as you can, mm-hmm. because I presume that's who you're freelancing for.
Exactly, yes.
What are the big stories?
The big thing around here is obviously Silicon Valley. And there are so many Irish companies working over here in Silicon Valley. The tech industry is huge, and so I've been tracking that quite a lot, you know, and there are many very innovative Irish people trying to set up companies, and there are Irish-Americans over here, Irish-American business people over here, trying to create an environment in which they can facilitate the creation of what they are hoping for is the next Google, but for it to be an Irish-based Google, or the next Facebook, whatever is the next big idea, that it can come from Ireland, that it can be an Irish product, and that it can create employment and vast wealth in Ireland.
And do you think Irish newspapers and so on grasp that, the potential opportunity that's out here, these small companies, small startups come out, some of them are Irish?
I think they're only starting to grasp it now. I mean, we see it with, say, St. Patrick's Day and the Irish ministers and so on getting so much, being facilitated so well in America to come over and meet people, meet the business community, meet senior politicians over here. The Irish newspapers are now starting to grasp that that's a positive thing, that it's not just a junket, that it's not just an excuse to come over and have a party, that there's real, genuine things that can happen here and there's links that can be made that are important. I mean, you even have Dublin City Council has twinned with San Jose, and it's been going on for 25 years. But the Dublin City Council sent over 4 delegates and about 6 or 7 business people from Dublin for the St. Patrick's Day Parade.
Open their eyes with regard to what they can do, what they could actually mm-hmm. really copy if they're going to be twinned.
And the people in San Jose are very, very positive about this, and the business community here is very positive about it. And it gives Ireland another avenue, another option.
Well, one of the big stories this week, looking back, was the decision by Barack Obama to visit Ireland.
Of course.
How big a deal do you think that is, or is it going to be?
Well, I think it's going to be huge. It's American presidents visiting Ireland has always been a big deal, and Barack Obama is probably the most popular American president that has been for generations, really. Bill Clinton, obviously, was a huge draw as well, but it's going to be a huge thing for Ireland. It's great. It's amazing that we have that Ireland has that draw, that it can attract President Obama, and that it's being reported across the board in America. You know, the Americans are actually delighted that Barack Obama is going to Ireland as well. They still have that link with Ireland, and it's still very strong, and people are still very positive about it.
Caroline, what would you think now, the idea of Barack Obama visiting Ireland? Do you think that would have business implications or financial implications? Could we do well out of something like that?
Oh, absolutely. I think the people of Ireland would love to see Barack Obama, and I think it would open the doors for tourism in Ireland, for people to see that Ireland is a beautiful place to go to and travel in.
So you think it would be well reported here in America if you were to go to Ireland?
I think so, yeah, for sure.
And I'm wondering, Colm, yourself, in terms of the American experience and what Barak's visit could open up in terms of opening people's eyes to the possibilities in terms of business and, I suppose, cross-Atlantic trade and so on. Do you think it's going to be a good thing?
Well, I think government and industry are so tightly linked here that's obviously leading from the front. They will go both ways, I think.
And in your case, would you think that the American model of recovery, economic recovery, is different to what it is at home? Can you feel the end of the recession, for instance, here?
I certainly feel that the press are reporting it differently, that's for sure. They talk a lot about recovery here, but it's not very clear that it's happening in parts. Like, you see a headline the other day recently that the valley feels shelved by recovery. This is the Central Valley. It's an agricultural area in California. And it's not clear to me that this recovery is actually happening around us, but the press is certainly pushing it in a way that the Irish press doesn't seem to do. So I think they're a bit more honest about it.
So they're looking for the upside indeed. Yeah. Well, thank you all for coming in this morning. Now to another man who left Ireland a long time before all of you. Galway man Joe Moore has been in the US for more than 50 years, leaning on his farming background in Galway to set up a vineyard in California. Our reporter Colette Kinsella took a trip through one of the other valleys outside San Francisco to meet him.
Here are cases of wine here.
Which wine is this now?
That's Pinot Noir, dear, that wine.
We're obviously not a nation of wine growers, so how much would you expect an Irishman born in the 30s to know about wine?
Now, light is a good word for it. You know.
Quite a lot, as it turns out, because he owns his own vineyard. And he may just be the next important name in Californian wine. It does smell like berries as well,
yeah,
doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah. It's easy to drink it. It's smooth and it has enough of bite there too that, you know, you're not drinking water or you're not drinking something else. Drink some of it.
Mm.
So we can go over the bridge if you want.
Yeah, great.
You want to go out in the wet? Yeah.
Joe Moore founded the Chalkmore Winery with his four children in 1999.
It used to be when we came here, There was nothing. There was no trees, there was no life of any kind.
The wine we just tasted is called The Prophet. They hope to launch a second label in the next couple of months under the name Chalk Moore.
A lot of it gets sold in San Francisco to the restaurants and the few of the Irish bars and stuff.
Joe lives on 50 acres of incredibly lush land, about an hour outside San Francisco.
This here is where the water is pumped out of the ground. These are the wells that delivers the water out to the vineyard.
When you're standing in front of the fields, rows of vines fan out in front of you. They've just been pruned, so the plants are short and neat.
See, all this stuff had to get cut off, and it's very intensive. It takes a guy with his shears quite a while to do that.
Joe may be new to wine, but he's no stranger to agriculture. He grew up on a small farm in Galway. Take me back. How old were you when you left Glenamaddy?
I probably was 15. There wasn't much around, small farm and no work, and you know, I had never seen a flush toilet until I went to Dublin.
He went to Dublin as an apprentice carpenter. After a few years, he headed to London and eventually to the US.
Probably had about $5 when I arrived in America.
Really? And that was what year?
In 1957.
And where did you arrive?
I came to New York. Obviously, I came by boat, the Mauritania, and came to New York, a sister and brother there. So I didn't have to bring a lot of money with me because I knew where I was going. So.
Joe worked as a carpenter on the skyscrapers.
You know that famous photograph of the guys having their lunch on top of the high beam?
Yeah.
Would you have been that high? Would it have been like that?
Yes. You got 10 cents an hour. Height money extra over the guys that came on a safe platform behind you.
Height money, wow.
Yeah, and that crew would be the ones that would prepare safety, as they called it.
Joe didn't hang around in New York. He travelled all around the US and landed in San Francisco in the early 60s, in time for Flower Power.
yeah, that was quite an experience. Yeah, the main street, Haight Street, that great street as they called it. If you wanted to get a good view of naked ladies and naked men, it would be okay to go there and see it.
How would you describe your life now?
Very relaxed. You know, glad to stand back and watch my family do what they are doing and what they will do.
Colette Kinsler reporting there. That's about all we have time for. Don't forget to join me for The Business on RTE1 television next Friday night at 8:30, when we will reveal the secrets to a happy workplace and why it's good for business. So from this happy workplace, Colm Maureen, along with his guitarist Jeff Van Linden, is going to play us out, and we'll be back and home in Ireland at the same time next week. Until then, thanks for listening. Colm, you can take it away there.
Business on RTE Radio 1 with Friends First. Part of the Eureko Group, the leading pan-European insurance group.
And the programme is an Old Yard production for RTE Radio 1.